Off the Ball, GAA.
That was a revenge mission in full flight. The only fortunate thing about it for Cork was that it was in a game of no consequence.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think Ciara, we'll probably start with Katie McCabe. There was a really good match report by Kit Shepherd in the Sunday Times that kind of encapsulated, I thought, everything that was great about Arsenal's win yesterday in the Champions League final.
Yeah, like, who doesn't love an underdog story? And I think they've come through the Champions League as underdogs, winning games they shouldn't have won, and then to come up against the giants of women's football, Barcelona, and to grind out a win in Katie McCabe fashion. Very physical game, getting stuck in. Like, it's... I didn't watch it myself, but I'll be definitely looking back at the highlights just to see, like, a tough physical game of football. And I think his piece really captures the football side of things. Like, it's completely focused on the game, how it's played, and really, really captures just Arsenal having to grind it out. Even though they did have a goal cancelled early on in the game, it was very football focused, and I love that style of writing for women's sport.
Absolutely. Like, I'm just going to quote some of it. Stina Blackstenius is the Swede, swept home the winner in the 74th minute, but Sleggers, this is Renee Sleggers, the coach, was the architect of this gargantuan shock. She'd sent on Blackstenius and Beth Mead 6 minutes earlier in a double substitution, which meant that Chloe Kelly, who gave a wonderful masterclass in shithousery, was withdrawn. The switches worked a treat with Blackstenius' dynamism and Mead's finesse, delivering the only goal in Lisbon after a corner was cleared to her. Mead's intricate reverse pass with her weaker left foot put Blackstenius clear, and the Swedish striker finished clinically. This was the defining moment of Arsenal's immaculate tactical performance, which was defined by unerring pragmatism and intermittent, incisive ventures forward. So that's how you write about any sport.
Yeah, he also described it as one of the greatest days in Arsenal's 139-year history. I was working last night in the Mail, and we were wondering what we're going to put on the back page, because the GA, you know, Donegal lost to Tyrone,
yes,
and Armagh won, but no one was knocked out, and we were kind of debating. Next thing, Katie wins the Champions League, and these pictures arrived in, and you see them, and it was great to see the papers today. Kind of poster-type souvenir pictures, and she just looks great. I was saying to Ciara outside, like, there's just something about her that's compelling, you know? There's a bit of an edge to her. You know, she's kind of, the way she plays, you know, I think she dropped an expletive in an interview. She's just compelling when you see, this is an elite top level achievement. I mean, Barcelona were, I think they were expected to romp home on this, weren't they?
They've gone for 3 in a row.
It's a massive shock.
They were 9-1 on outsiders.
Yeah, and she's playing at that level. And, you know, we were talking outside, and, you know, what are the chances of Katie lifting a trophy with Ireland, you know? So to do this is a monumental achievement, and it was just great to see it. It makes you very proud, you know?
Yeah.
You'd be proud of her. Like, and looking at these pictures now today, it just stands out as a special moment.
I think it was everybody's fault, the media included, in 2007 when Emma Byrne and when Yvonne Tracy and Ciara Grant won a Champions League with Arsenal, and it wasn't a drop in the Pacific Ocean,
yeah,
of recognition for it. Now Katie McCabe is getting the due recognition.
We've come a long way since those days, and there's certain... Just talking about Irish female stars like Katie McCabe, Katie Taylor, and Rasida Dalecki, their back page, their box office, is not female or male sport. It's just these.
Rachel Blackmore,
Rachel
retiring
Blackmore too,
as well.
Yeah, you saw the coverage, yeah, she got. Like, so we've come so far since then, and I hope she enjoys this exposure because she's fully deserving of it.
You wonder why it took so long. It's almost happened by osmosis, and the right thing is happening now, but the coverage wasn't there 18, 19 years ago.
No. And I think if you even, like, how many Irish football players have actually won a Champions League? Like, probably more women now than men.
Yeah.
If you think
very,
about it.
Yeah. Very few.
John O'Shea's the only one I can think
Dennis
of.
Dennis Irwin, Roy Keane,
yeah,
Ronnie Whelan, and Mark Lawrence. And then you got to go back to the 60s with Shea Brennan, George Best, but very few.
No, yeah. And Katie didn't win it, you know, was sitting on the bench or in and out of the squad. She's the starter.
Mm.
You know,
yeah,
she is key to their game. So, you know, that's just cherry on top.
And a fellow dub as well, Ciara.
Hello, Dub, yeah. Hello, I've claimed outside that she's my neighbour, which is not really.
But the knock-on effect for, you know, it's the obvious one, but, like, kids watching that,
yeah,
you know, they're going to want to be like that. They're going to have the posters up on the wall, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So it's only positive, you know.
She said that in an interview with David Kelly in the Irish Independent yesterday. She was that person. She was, yeah, that youngster, and she now will inspire youngsters. And the World Cup thing as well. I mean, you're standing for national anthem in front of a full house in Sydney, and I know the World Cup didn't go that great, but to score the World Cup finals, to be at the World Cup finals, and to do this now. As you say, it's elite sport.
That's why this coverage is so important, because if you go back to when you're talking about, John, like 18 years ago, and girls who were into soccer, like, they have to follow Dennis Irwin or, you know what I mean? There was no one to see to follow then, you know? So all this is a huge positive, I think.
So many feel-good stories. That's one. I mean, even go back to Crystal Palace last week, Tottenham during the week, Aberdeen yesterday, Sunderland yesterday. And you'd be thinking, well, maybe it's not a bad thing that Katie was the star, because we were thinking, what are we going to fill the void with Leinster not being in the Champions Cup final? And then you have Northampton and Bordeaux in it, and a first ever win for Union Bordeaux Begle in the Champions Cup final in rugby in Cardiff. They beat Northampton 28 points to 20, pulsating match, really good, exciting game, 20 points apiece at the break. Northampton, a bit like 2011, didn't score in the second half, which is a strange thing. But yesterday was the day of finals. We got Roy Keane writing about the quality of the game and maybe warning signs for our Irish rugby with the ability and depth in England and France going forward. You've got Shane Horgan in the Sunday Times, a sobering analysis of where Leinster are now, 4 years since they last won a trophy. So Irish rugby, I would say, in the aeroplane is undergoing a bit of turbulence. Would you agree?
100% agree. It's a real, I mean, you look at the other provinces, Ulster, Munster, Connacht, in the doldrums almost, you know. Munster still have a shot at the URC, but like there's a lot of problems there structurally. That they need to address. Their pathways are all over the shop, and they might disagree with that statement, but it's true. So Irish rugby is going through a bit of a wobble period, but I'd much rather that wobble happens now, 2 years out from a World Cup, than what's been happening for the last however many years, where we're like top of the pile heading into World Cup and then flop, you know. So if they take proper steps to address these issues now, I see Shane Horgan saying Leinster winning the URC is vital. I know what people say, it's just a consolation prize and doesn't matter, but it does matter. They have to win that now. Or else I'd say you'd see some serious upheaval there. If they can win that and go from there. But when they won their first European Cup in 2009, people kind of forget they won the Magnus League, as it was called then, the year before. And that was the perfect springboard into finally...
For Michael Shaker, yeah.
Yeah. Brian Driscoll talks about that a lot. So... It's vital now that they... There's been a lot of fallout from the loss to Northampton. You hear different things. I'd be a massive Leo Cullen fan, but he's getting a lot of flack. I personally don't understand how you can bring in a World Cup winning South African coach and then kick to the corner, you know, when he's won two World Cups by playing
pragmatic football. This is in the Horgan piece, and here's the guy quoted here. The problem for Leinster now is that Northampton have shown how you can beat them. Leinster have started using an ultra-aggressive blitz defence under Jack Nienaber this season. I'm not necessarily sure it suits them or it's an ideal basis for winning the European Cup. It's put in place to intimidate and essentially places a bet against the opposition having the skill or ambition to beat it. They're saying, if you can beat the press, then good for you. But some teams are capable of just doing that, which Northampton did.
Yeah, like it feels like Leinster were worked out. And there's also a mental issue there, which is clear that they, when it comes to the crunch thing, that there's a weakness there. But like Rory Keane's talking about it, that was a high quality final yesterday. They were playing good rugby, and there's, you know, the top 14 is flying. Premiership is struggling a bit in England, but they're producing a lot of good players. I think you'll see the English players on this Lions tour being the dominant force. There's a lot of evidence that the Irish guys might be slightly coming down the other side of the mountain. So as Rory's asking, you know, is this concerning now that we're going to slip back, you know? So
I will not understand, though, on Christmas Day this year, when I'm having my champagne and my turkey, why Geordie Barrett did not start that Champions Cup semi-final. I will not understand that.
People will be asking that question in 50 years' time. I think, look, there's a lot of, you hear all these different things coming out of the camp, and this happened, that happened, he said this, he said that, they were told this, whatever. Bottom line is, and it's not hindsight talking, we all said it the week of, and he was brought over for this purpose, he didn't start. And all you can say is that, you know, the Leinster Twitter was saying buy your tickets now for the final and all this before the Northampton game, and there was maybe a complacency there that we can get by. I mean, like, it's not like Robbie Henshaw is a dud, he's a quality player, like he's a world class player, so they maybe thought we could just do it this way, and it just blew up in their faces, you know. So,
yeah, okay. I think, yeah,
that's a puzzler though for all time.
It is a puzzler, yeah. I think that there was a reason for that at the time. I don't know exactly why, but I think there was a reason why Leinster did that they were defending themselves about. You liked the piece on the TMO, did you? Stuart Barnes, the sick of the TMO. I mean, we'd VAR in soccer, which is driving everybody mad, well, if you're me. And then you had the TMO driving Stuart Barnes mad yesterday in the Champions Cup final.
Yeah, he acknowledges the first half was, you know, nail-biting, entertaining, but the second half was kind of killed. And I like the piece because rugby was, you know, set a really good example of how to use technology and the TMO and how well it was working. And he made the point that, is it going to be the new norm that games are going to be over 2 hours long, you know, or that you have to dedicate nearly 3 hours to a game when you put in the pre-match and halftime analysis?
And the Irish anthems going on for 17 minutes.
Yeah, the anthems as well. I love that pageantry now. I don't mind that going on. But yeah, I just think it's a insight into a bigger piece that we need to be careful that, you know, he makes a point about human error. Sometimes we just have to accept and enjoy the human error element of it. And if everything has been picked out and kind of nitpicking and all these, yes, they're fouls and technically, you know, that's brilliant, but the game has to have a bit of flow. And you look at the likes of, say, hurling, when they're taking lumps out of each other and you can't swing the hurl or, you know, the butt of the hurl into the ribs. But sometimes that just makes the game that little bit more entertaining when there's nothing malicious in it. It's just free-flowing. And, you know, I think rugby and sports in general just have to be a little bit careful that technology doesn't take over too much and embrace the human errors a little bit.
100% agree with Ciara and Stuart Barnes. Rugby's such a complex sport. You could have an infringement at every engagement. There's a rule in rugby that you're not supposed to go off your feet at ruck time. And they've basically just done away with that rule. They've ignored the rule for the attacking team. So you see guys flying in all the time, which is always an infringement, but they just let it go. I mean, if you blew up for everything that happened in rugby, you would be there all day. And they're, as Ciara said, they're blowing up for way too much at the moment. And this is before you get to the scrums. Like, the scrum thing is just madness. Like, when Ireland's women lost to Scotland in the Six Nations, the referee that day, the amount of time she was allowing for the scrums, and the Scots just played the clock down as they crouched set. And how often do you see a scrum end with the ball coming out and going out the back? This always seems to end in a penalty or a free kick. It's just a complete waste of time. And I agree 100%. Like, rugby has to be very careful on this one, because it can be a long and hard watch.
And also, know, the slow motion replays of players crashing into each other sometimes make it look a lot worse or intentional than it actually was.
I would say on the safety issue, you know, err on the side of caution. But in terms of the actual delaying to the game, there's way too much for overkill on it. Like.
And would you have the same, as a former sports person, the view on VAR and soccer? Has it kind of dulled or diluted your enjoyment of football?
It just takes too long. So, you know, you can go make a cup of tea or whatever in the bar. And you come back, they still won't have figured out. Like most of the time when you're watching a game or looking at VAR, you know on the first or second replay what the call is going to be. But they go over and over and over and over again. And it is frustrating. Do we need a VAR clock? They've so many seconds to figure it out, or else the referee call stands. You know?
Would you like a shot clock in Gaelic football?
It'd be nil all, would it? So probably no.
Yeah, but it's interesting when you talk about rules. Like, I think the Football Review Committee in men's Gaelic football has been absolutely radical and amazing, and it's been brilliant. And that's when you apply rules in a positive way, what it can do.
Yeah, like I was at a club match yesterday, and like we were well beaten, but it was attacking football the whole way. And even though both teams tried to defend and close it out, it was attacking football. And probably don't see it as much at inter-county level, when not the risk is greater, but it's way more tactical, and the standard is much higher. So possession is gold, because you're going to be punished whenever you don't keep the ball. But at club level, it's transformed the game. I think the changes have been fantastic. Probably give it a year or two to fully settle in. The men's club game, give it a few years to settle in, and then we'll see the fruits of it. But at the moment, I'm all in favour for it. Like, the game is entertaining. A lot of the football matches are more entertaining. Like, who's been talking about Leinster Football Championship, and now we have it because there's been a little change. And, you know, even Munster is coming to life. Ulster has always kind of been there because of the crowd or whatever. But football's entertaining again, and I think it's only the beginning of it.
Ciara Trant and Hugh Farrelly are with us on the Sunday pay-per-view. Got to take a break for news. Just to let you know, folks, it's Galway 10 points, Mayo 2 points in the ladies' Connacht football final. That match ongoing. 37 minutes on the watch. And Josh Keady playing for Leighton Orient against Charlton in the League One playoff final. And it's Charlton who lead by 1-0. Charlton 1-0 up at the break in that one. Lots to come here on the Sunday pay-per-view. So much more. And we're going to be back after the news with that.